If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My friend Gail, Jules the Gill, Jules Gillian Guildford of Gilshire.
That is my name.
Is his full name. First of all, title about a podcast, I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
UBB.
Second of all, massive thank you to everybody who sent us their graphics for the Spotify Wrapped stuff, saying that the What Culture Gaming podcast and the UBP were some of their most listened to shows of the whole year. That was incredible to see. Thank you all very, very much. And we genuinely couldn't do it without you. We rely entirely on community stuff to be able to do this in the first place.
There are very few times across my internet tenure where I am genuinely humble, but this is that knocked me on my ass just to see that there were so many people that were listening to all of the quality shows that we put out on the What Culture Gaming podcast side. Like, I am so happy to be part of a team, but I know, big props to you, Scott, because you pretty much single-handedly manage all of this and make sure that all of the strings are pulled in the right direction. And then there's me, Josh, and Benroy just going, "Way!"
I'm just sort of I'm like a ski lift. I sort of go back to the top every now and then, you hop on, and then we just fly down for a bit, and then I'll hop back on.
Yeah, it needs oiling every once in a while because you're just like, "Well," this goes around the corner.
Thank you very much. I think, I obviously couldn't do it without you guys. Obviously, couldn't do it without you specifically, and I couldn't do it without everybody helping us along. So I think we've got a nice little thing going. Big love all round. I think we've got a nice little thing going. The UBP is brilliant. And the wind up on Monday and the main show on Wednesday. Tell your friends. I was going to say get subscribed. Probably why you're here. Go tell your friends. Make it even bigger. So yeah, this week or every time we do the Entitled Banter podcast, we just ask you guys whatever you'd like us to talk about. Obviously, we had a massive response this week because we had all the Spotify stuff helping us get out there. So we've got more out of left field, sorts of questions. Gaming stuff is in here, but also all sorts of different things. So we'll get to as many different talking points and questions as we can. First one from TJ, who says, Canadian asking the UK, pancakes with maple syrup for breakfast. Also, best Super Mario minigame.
Was there a question mark behind the pancakes question? Because otherwise it's a statement, and that is a very different thing. Like, pancakes with maple syrup for breakfast? Yes!
Well, the thing is, like, he said, Canadian asking the UK. That is, what else are you putting with pancakes? I mean, I'll put a sausage with it. I'll put sausage and syrup on there. But it's, of course you do.
Some people put ice cream on it. Some people put different sort of like bits, like compotes on the side. But the question really here is, because we're all agreed that pancakes for breakfast with maple syrup is an absolute stone cold classic. The real question is crispy bacon or regular bacon? Because the Americans, they love their shards of bacon glass that break in their mouth and cut the roof of their mouth.
I do love I like the crispy stuff, but I think it can get too much. You can get those people who double down on it, like you said, and it's barely a food stuff at that point. It's more just like a weapon. Like, I could probably rob a bank with it or something. Yeah. Like, it's not really
holding somebody up at bacon point.
Yeah, like a big old like manhunt style. But I think, I don't know. I mean, like, this is blowing my mind as I'm speaking, because who's out there not the fact that he has to ask the entire nation to be like, are you guys not putting syrup on pancakes? Like, what are you doing?
Believe it or not, I know that like the UK or England as a whole, we're kind of a little bit backwards when it comes to the culinary stuff. Like, we were looked down upon for ages by the French for their culinary expertise, and like we're a bit backwards in that sense. But we don't just sit around having dry Weetabix in an antique bowl for breakfast. We don't just like have our butler pour like tea on our depression face and that's it. Like, we actually do experience other stuff. Like, for example, there's some mad cereals out there. Have you ever tried the joy / heart attack / sugar coma that is the Lion Bar cereal?
No, I didn't even know that was a thing. I was with all the marshmallows in it. It's very American.
Charms.
Lucky Charms.
Don't pick up the Lucky Charms. They're stale. They're awful. It's literally, they're just like, everyone's like, He's like, oh yeah, I'll be prepared to pay £5 for a box here in the UK just so I can get a handful of dusty, crusty marshmallows.
Hell yeah. Do you remember when we were kids back in the day when it was like Ricicles did like a marshmallow spin-off for a bit?
Oh yeah.
And then they were only around for like
were they
a few
the planets?
Weeks,
Ricicles planets? Is that what
they
were? Yeah,
something like that. And then they went away and then we started getting the American Lucky Charm thing and I was like, oh my God, they're coming back. But it wasn't that. It was like this other company. And like you said, it's just a bowl of sugar and dryness. But the marshmallow was in there. It's you know, it's close.
My favorite bit is when you get the like the Audi or Lidl's knockoff brands ones, where instead of like Crave, it's like Nougat pillows or something. Like that. You're just kind of like, what are you trying to do here?
Semi Lucky Charms. I think. Yeah. But he also said, "What's the best Super Mario minigame?" Now, in my head, I don't know if he means the likes of, you know, going down one of the racetracks in Mario 64 where you're racing like a penguin, or does Super Mario Party minigames? Because that's a whole other world. What does your mind go to when you think of best Super Mario minigame? Because that is technically the franchise.
I always think of like Mario Party when the words minigame get attached to it. So I'll have to go for the, I don't even know what the name is it, but I just call it the Rollo Bollo, which is basically where you just roll around on those big balls and try and knock each other off the ice things.
Oh, I know what you mean.
I like that one because of the fact that it's A, very simple to get to grasp with, and B, it is balked to all hell because it is so broken. Depending on like the certain AI settings that you go for, you can literally stand still and have them knock each other off and not have to do anything. And I'm like, I love this game.
The thing is, I'm just full admittance, I've not played or hadn't played a Mario Party game until 2021, until like last month when I got Mario Party Superstars.
New one, did you?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's really, really good. Like, I knew what Mario Party was, but I've never played one, and I've always watched people do it. Like, they always divide rooms. People either hate the randomness of it or love how stupid it is, and I'm like loving it. So I'm really enjoying it, but I get why people would be bouncing off it. But yeah, I love the one that you just mentioned. And there's one where you're rolling around as like bricks and you've got to squish people. I love all the ones where it's like 1v3 where you're just sort of taking everybody on. You're throwing a boulder down a hill and you got to squish people.
Yeah, I like that one.
But I mean, I know these like 20-year-old opinions, but still.
There's one where, like, I think it's on one of the newer games where one of you's like working with King Boo, and you've got it. You can only move when they're like facing the other way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There's one.
That's quite good.
When you go through Bowser's Castle and you're working with someone, you got to go like left, right, left, right.
That's
so
cool.
Like do like step at a time. Anything like that where you've got to do actual teamwork, I always like. But yeah, the I was going to say, in summary, good pancakes, good Mario mini games. It's all good. Next question from Brennan, who says, "What's the most disappointing game you've ever played?" Doesn't necessarily have to be the worst, just that your expectations of it were all-time favorites and never played it past the first weekend.
I've got my answer locked and loaded for this, and it is Left Alive, because I wanted that game to be so much better than I thought it was going to be, because I was pulled in by, I can't remember the name of the artist who does all the artwork. Yuji Shinkawa, amazing artist.
Yes,
but
Metal Gear Solid guy.
That's the thing. That's what he's known for, like in the video game world. Mm-hmm. So therefore, when you see his artwork attached to a new project by Square Enix that promises the kind of the over-the-top characters that they're known for, and
there's
the sort
mechs
of stealth
in it. They're very much channeling like Metal Gear.
They literally were just saying like, so it's a bit of a rip-off, but you know, it's going to be brilliant. But that was the biggest like lie I'd ever been told at that point, because I was on full bore to be like, oh, this is going to be my game. It's going to be Final Fantasy meets the Metal Gear craziness. I'm here for it. And then I got that game. I played it and I was like, oh, you've forgotten to actually implement some decent stealth mechanics.
Game, yeah.
Right. So have you actually played it?
No, that's the thing. I love Yoji Shinkawa. I've got all the Metal Gear art books and everything. Love Kojima, whatever. But like when that thing was getting previewed, I was like, well, it's very much trading on Metal Gear. And I didn't get into the hype. I was like, I'll believe it if I see it. Like just having one artist on board wasn't enough to convince me it could play well. And then when the reviews were dog and you were like, it's abysmal, I was like, I'm going to run the other way then, because this seems not good.
So I've got this like thing where I don't like reviewing games to give them bad scores. I'd only review games that I actually would recommend other people get, because like I'll save the absolute slag fest, as it were, to go at it. I'll save that for a list or a future video, but I don't like wasting my time going through and trying to give it a breakdown as to why it's bad, when I just can't bring myself to just be like, hey, this is absolute hot garbage.
This is not worth your time, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not worth your time to even watch a review of it. So that's what I felt when I played Left Alive. And I think that the moment that I gave up on it was it spent about 20 or so minutes building up this whole thing of like, oh, you can place traps around and lure enemies into them. And I was like, this sounds quite interesting. I'm on the back foot. I don't have the ammo. They walked through my trap. It went off and they took about 3 points of damage.
They were
and I was
left
like,
alive, you might
Yeah,
say.
They were left alive. And I was left absolutely stone cold dead, and my enthusiasm along with it.
My thing, I've never been more disappointed by a game than Mass Effect 3, although I've never...
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, I mean, like, Mass Effect 1, like, it's still, Mass Effect 1 is one of my favorite games of all time. Mass Effect 2 at the time was absolutely phenomenal, still brilliant now. But going into 3, I was just, I couldn't believe how, because it was the beginning of the EA getting their tendrils in, right, and messing stuff up, period. And then there was all the rumors of the fact that, oh my God, EA had made it so that, you know, character-specific character Yavik was not on the disc, it was DLC only, and there was all that stuff. And then when the game actually finally came out, the reality of that was just crushing, and the story being such a mess, and the end of it and everything. That is the most I've ever been disappointed by something, but I've never abandoned anything. I've never, like, not finished it, because if I'm looking forward to it that much, I'll have to see it through just so I
really
know what it is. Yeah,
that is a testament to your to your drive to complete stuff, because the amount of time I have, torture.
I mean, I don't know. I think to some degree, Cyberpunk 2077, but I love that game still. I'm still like 120 hours into it. I just think I accept that it's not what they sold, but I still had an absolute blast with it. So I think part of that. But yeah, I've never just gone, F this game, I'm not getting through it. I've always been like, I invested so much of my time in the run-up that I'm going to have to see what this is, even if it's an absolute abysmal thing.
Madness. But,
it is madness. But these are the thoughts you have at 2:30 in the morning. You've got to get through
stuff. Yeah, true.
Next question from Vin Van Meel, an absolute legend in himself, who says, which game sequel changed the formula for the better? Jack 2 came from Jack 1 and brought all the metal and attitude. Perhaps Spider-Man 2, because they decided pizza delivery missions work better in an open world. Also, what's your comfort TV show? So I guess you could tackle this however you want.
Okay, so comfort TV show that I would put on is probably either something like a comedy that I can just dip in and out of it, like Bob's Burgers or The American Office. I did enjoy up until like, what's his name? God, I can't remember his name. I was going to call him Michael Scott.
But
I can't
remember the actor. I've never seen The American
Office. When he goes, I can't remember his name. I'm sorry, Michael mate. Yeah, it's Michael Scott is the character's name, and I can't remember.
Oh, Steve.
Why is it so?
I can think of is Steve Amell, and it's because I watched a random wrestling match with him the other day. It's not him.
This is the thing that I hate the most about being on the air quotes internet, is that you know this. And as soon as I finish this podcast,
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell, thank you. I just vamped.
Steve Buscemi? No, it's not
somebody remembers. So I'll put something on like that. Just a nice chill thing. I wouldn't be able to just go and say, like, The Wire is, by all accounts, my favorite TV show ever made, because I've just finished watching it with the missus. Like, we've literally just gone through it together, and I walked away from it going, I finally understand why people big this up so much.
Right.
There wasn't a single bit of fat on the project. And while there was like season 5 arguably maybe didn't need to happen, overall as an experience, loved it. But I couldn't say that that's my favorite casual viewing thing, because it requires a lot of investment from you to keep pace with the show. I need something that I just literally zone in, zone out, ha ha ha, that's funny, that's not funny, whatever.
Mine would entirely be Simpsons between seasons 1 and 8.
Oh.
Or just anything Friends before season 9-ish.
Okay.
Because like, I mean, that show has aged in a million different ways, and some of them are horrific, and some of them are like, oh, you guys were going for something, that's cool. But then, yeah, but I grew up on Friends. I think it's one of the best written comedies of all time. I can just dip into that thing left, right, and center. I think more recently, it's become stuff like Rick and Morty, but like the older seasons, I feel like the new stuff is a bit more hit and miss. But yeah, like you said, it's got to be something where you can just drop into it. Like I said, old school Simpsons. Disney Plus is literally a Simpsons subscription for me. I'm not watching anything else on that entire service. So there is that. But in terms of sequels that changed the formula for the better, Jack 2 would have been one of my shouts. I know it's such a completely different thing regards to, like, it made it like an open world, like an angry angst game. But yeah, I mean, that's like a bit of a tough thing in terms of they changed stuff for the better. It's rare that they change that much anyway. I tend to think of, you know, sequels in obviously movies and stuff, you're going back to a narrative, you're trying to find a specific plot thread to tease out, to stretch out, to go again. Whereas in gaming, you've got the engine already made, you've got the gameplay stuff already in motion. So it's a lot of, let's just do this again, but better. So I'm actually struggling on sequels that notably change stuff. I feel like it would be sequels that like perfected stuff, like Assassin's Creed 2 or God of War 2 or Halo 2, in my case. But
I would say,
Halo 2 going online was a big old change.
That's a huge change, actually. That actually changed the face of the game entirely, really, when you think about it, because like going from like it just opened up stuff in such a way that now Infinite drops with its multiplayer first before the campaign, because it's become synonymous with the experience.
Oh
so
my God,
go.
by the time we next talk on Calm, the Halo Infinite will be out. And I mean, I'm
oh,
like,
it will.
50 hours or whatever into the multiplayer now, but I'm just counting the days.
I can't wait to play that campaign, to be fair.
Till the chief is here, till the chief's in. I'm looking forward to him. Chief Leaf, can't wait.
To go back to the question, I think that my sequel that would change everything would probably be the shift from Dynasty Warriors 1 to 2, like a huge fan of the series. So that was obviously like a fighting game, and then it's suddenly gone to like the what we know of it now, the sort of pseudo 1 versus 1,000 level design that they had there. And to be fair, that was the best decision they ever made, because even though it's been the same game for, let me check my watch, decades now, it's still managing to roll out the laughs and enjoyment for me. So there we go.
I think, like I said before, I think it would just be something like Halo 2. But I mean, if you have Halo 1 on PC, you could take it online. But 2 was the one that, for me, was that changed how I thought of first-person shooters. It changed the everything about that, discovering online communities and everything else. I still adore Halo 2. Next question from The Second Shard. What game franchises would benefit from a slight genre shift? I, for example, can't fathom why Ubisoft haven't made Rayman a Metroidvania. Honestly, it keeps me up at night. Now, I love that. I think that's incredible.
That's a great take.
If we had Rayman Legends style platforming with a nice, I guess you would call it an open world, but like a Metroidvania map thing, I would devour that. I was the absolute mad lad back in 2013 or whenever Rayman Legends came out, going, this is better than Mario.
Playing it, 100%.
Going, this is sublime.
In terms of like level design, in terms of aesthetics, in terms of everything about it, it's just a... You know when people use the expression like it's a love letter to like old school platformers? This is like the romance novel with the comedy lipstick marks all over it. It's perfect.
There was like a thing at the start of the 2010s when you had the Ubi Art division within Ubisoft and you got Valiant Hearts and Child of Light, and then they also
Valiant
did the
Art Hearts. Like
the idea that like Ubisoft now would do a almost side-scrolling 2D, very well-researched war extrapolation of what it means to go to war is... Yeah. Not at all where they are now, where they're doing Far Cry 6 and Assassin's Creed Infinity's in development. And I'm just sort of like, well, that old school bit where they were like aesthetic first, art direction first, charm overall. Like that was, I mean, and Rayman came out of that too, where I was like, this is phenomenal. The music levels in the Rayman games where you're like playing along to Black Betty, but you're jumping each like drum beat. That's so cool.
The worst thing is that out of the Rayman franchise, the rabbits have taken over, and it's just like, oh,
hey, I love the rabbits.
But I can't think of something that I hate more than them, because the fact that
the
like,
minions,
I look at them,
maybe?
Yeah, it's because they are minions. They are absolutely idiotic. They don't like speak. They do that sort of thing. They're just completely child friendly. Do you know what? There's a bit of me that understands why they've done that. It is insanely marketable as an idea.
I love
but
them.
Every time I look at them, I just think that we're not getting another Rayman game because this is more successful than him. A little plonker like this has come along and taken his own franchise.
If they did a Rabbids game that played like Rayman Legends, I would devour that. I'd love that.
No, don't you dare do that to me, Scott, because that means that we're not getting a Rayman game, but we're getting a Rabbids game. No, I'm not supporting this.
I just like the way that they play, the way Rayman Legends plays. If I could play as a little bundle of Rabbids, like bouncing around, all like they're all trying to be a group, but they keep getting separated and they bounce around, I would love that. And I could hit a button that makes them go, I would love that, to be honest.
I'd like them to take the Dead Rising franchise, right? Mm. And turn that into a massively open, like online experience. Because imagine going into a city that is filled with like those literally hundreds of thousands of zombies with all of those crazy weapons, right? Mm. And it's you and like a team of 4 other people versus maybe, I don't know, like 5 other teams of 4 other people. And you are all count each other as psychopaths, and you basically only win when everyone is dead. So it's kind of like Dead Rising Battle Royale.
I was going to say,
you've got the monstrously massive zombies there as well. And you can maybe do the twist being that you don't win necessarily by killing everyone, but maybe you get points for how you kill the zombies and in crazy and crazier ways. And it's the person to hit a point cap is the winner. You can get by killing other people, or you can just go crazy with all the custom weapons and stuff.
Every time I think of it, because every time someone talks about like Battle Royale zombies, like the zombie stuff that's in Call of Duty or like some of the PUBG stuff, I think H1Z1 had it as well. Like that's what I think of. I think of a way more fleshed out version of it where like it has more survival aspects, or it feels like you're in zombie fiction. It doesn't feel like a mod.
Yeah.
For Call of Duty, that feels like something that's just waiting to be done, like a proper open world zombie battle royale thing.
I want to go the arcade route of just being like, you are almost overpowered, that you just mulch through all these people there, but you've got other players as well to contend with who are also trying to achieve the same goal.
I think for me, I don't have, because the thing is, I just think about stuff that I'm missing in my life, and I miss brawlers. I miss 3D brawlers. Like you still get, you know, Street Rage 4. The bouncer, I like the bouncer a lot. The bouncer, Urban Reign.
The character in the bouncer, the way you could turn into a tiger or a puma. That was the best bit. When you just kind of like, I'm a puma, I'm gonna attack you.
I'm a puma. But the whole thing, it was in the 2000s, and then like it just went away. Like you still get 2D brawlers now, like Mother Russia Bleeds and Streets of Rage 4, but yeah. You never get 3D brawlers. And I feel like obviously upcoming, there's Sifu, which I can't wait to play. Mm-hmm. That seems like it's way more tactile than just launching a guy through a wall or whatever. But like still, that's the closest we've got to an open like 3D martial arts game, which I'm looking forward mm-hmm. to. And then there's Midnight Fight Express, which is sort of like, looks kind of like Def Jam. And I'm like, that's the closest Def Jam in ages. Plus the music's like a pumping synthwave thing. Nice. And I'm like, this is my cowboy S so much. Then I'm like, I'll take this. But so that would be my thing. That's what I'm missing. I would love Def Jam to come back and be a more free form, not story based necessarily, but more level based game mm-hmm. where you pick whatever rapper and you just go through different levels, doing finishes, doing environmental interactions and stuff like that. Make it more like a story driven over shoulder thing, but you can do really cool moves. I would take that.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Next question from Haley from the North Pole. What's a remake of a game you would recommend over the original, and what's an original you would recommend over the remake? Bonus points if I don't choose Final Fantasy VII, which is I can't. What am I supposed to pick if I can't pick that?
I will tell you hands down the remaster or remake that you should definitely not play and go and get the original for, and that is the. No, it's the 13 one. The 13 remake. I know I keep banging on about it, but please, for the love of God, never, ever,
did they never patch that? Did they never patch the cell shading?
They didn't do anything to it, Scott. That's the worst thing about it. Is they were just like, nah, this seems fine. And it's that little meme of the dog where the thing's on fire.
My thing for play the original over the remake, if I can't do Final Fantasy VII, which I would usually have neon flashing lights over, I still like the remake enough, but the original's way better, would be the Grand Theft Auto Trilogy originals, because the Definitive Edition is far from that, and you might as well go play the originals, if only for the more complete soundtracks. Rockstar have patched it this week, or Grove Street Games have, restoring some fog, so it doesn't look like the entire map is a Fortnite map anymore.
Their update to it was effectively a visual downgrade. to add limitations back in.
I do love that, though. Part of me loves the poetry, the irony of that. Like, we went through, you know, draw distance, and what's life going to be like when there's no technological limitations? Well, it's actually going to look terrible, to be honest. So can you put the fog back in? I can see too much.
So what would we do for the remake that we would suggest over the original, the
Spyro
remaster?
Spyro, for me. I think I would take the Spyro trilogy.
It does play incredibly
well. I actually prefer Naughty Dog's trilogy for Crash than the remake.
Fair enough,
The art style, I just kind of prefer the angular look. I think that suits his sort of attitude a bit more. Plus, I just have a soft spot for old school PS1 graphics. That's just me. In terms of other remakes, Resident Evil 2, I would say... They're different games, but
they are almost completely different experiences, aren't they? I'd just say both in that case for it. But yeah, for the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, I'd say that's like, for me personally, like I absolutely love the original games, but if we're being truly honest, it was only until like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 when the revert came in and you were able to chain everything together that the game sort of really took off to the stratosphere. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the remakes of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 that were released like a couple of years ago, they add in all of those tricks,
oh, yeah,
plus the old levels with all of like the old school sensibilities, mm-hmm, and a banging soundtrack as well. So I was like,
oh, they nailed it.
Kind of, like, is amazing. Like,
if you're going to like establish like a rule set on how to do this sort of thing, it's the way that they did it. Like, you take the mechanics that came from the sequels and you put them in the originals. That's what I thought GTA was going to do, and have it so you could jump out of a moving car in GTA 3 or do all
but
that stuff.
Didn't.
But they didn't do anything. So, but I think I love that way that the way that they approached it. Yeah, the Tony Hawk's remakes are stellar, and also all the songs are intact. Like, they went out of their way to secure all the songs, unlike Grove Street Games / Rockstar, who have more money than God, and they couldn't give me Michael Jackson in Vice City. So I don't know. But still, next question is Nathan R246. Hey, legends, hope you're doing well. What movie, game, or book has made you take a better look at yourself and made you change as a person? Mine was the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire when I first watched it when I was 5, and it's something I lived by ever since seeing it. The first Spidey was gorgeous back in the day.
Mm-hmm. That is an excellent question as well, my friend. It is always good to get some introspection from outside sources as well, because while it's very easy to go through life and just think that you can better yourself through just like the way that you act and treat people, sometimes it is an outside force coming in that allows you that perspective to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I read a book called Siddhartha. It's an incredible story about the sort of life and journey of Buddha and how his teachings came to be in different forms and how other people react to him and like the lessons that he passes on as well. Mm-hmm. I am not a super spiritual person at heart. I just believe in treating people well, regardless of your faith and creed. Like, that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. But this, I took away from it one specific section, which was when Siddhartha is talking to a man as they're crossing a river, and he says, look at the river itself and imagine that you're the stone at the very bottom of it. The good and the bad pass over you, but just don't be moved by either. And I like that because of the fact that it's very easy to get swept up in the negativity of life and be able to effectively be rolled down that stream and like to a place that you're not happy with. But also sometimes celebrating and overindulging in the good aspects can also have the same effect in you, because you don't push yourself. You don't basically like stay true to yourself if you're just letting the good stuff dictate where you want to go and who you want to be. So I really like that mantra of just being like stoic, just let the good and bad wash over you in equal measure and come out the other side, having learned from it and not reacting too extremely to either.
Yeah. I mean, the, you know, this too shall pass is also one of the best pieces of advice anyone can give anyone, like all the good stuff, all the bad stuff, more so the bad stuff will pass far better. I'm a big believer in that stuff in terms of just like light a candle in the darkness, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And especially in regards to what you said, like all those things are just going to pass you by, and that's okay. You don't have to get swept up in the big negative energy of the day just for the sake of some attention or just for the sake of getting on that bandwagon or whatever it is at that given time. Hilariously, mine is nowhere near as well thought out as that. Mine is probably just going to be something like Metal Gear Solid 5, because weirdly, I had a whole thing across the early 2010s. I think it's because I went to university and I was just like, I'm past this over-the-top stuff. This is cringe now, and I'm going to be into serious things. And then all those things didn't go away altogether. But when Metal Gear Solid finally came back around with Metal Gear 5, and I went back and I replayed some of the older Metal Gears, and I was like, I love this stuff. I love how over-the-top this is. I love how crazy this is. It's okay to enjoy big, dumb, over-the-top stuff. And I didn't realize how much I was becoming this, or I'd been like, encased in this sort of university overly critical bubble, and I was like, it's okay to just enjoy stuff and not have to overanalyze every last thing. And like I said, that side of me hadn't gone away altogether, but it was a great rekindling of that, and I was just kind of like, I can enjoy this stuff. And I love Metal Gear 5 and everything, but it was just that remembering that it's okay to enjoy the things that you did when you were growing up, because some of those more innocent reasons to enjoy them can be completely valid. Like, you know, you don't have to over criticize everything to the point of not enjoying anything.
Yeah, 100% it's obviously a balance.
Yeah, it's case by case and everything else, but like that was something for me. So Metal Gear Solid and the Book of the Buddha they go right next to each other. Next question from The Gaming Nook. If you and Jules went head to head using only games that began with your initials, who would win? For example, I went with against my housemate and I pitted Bioshock and Halo 3 versus Doom and Skies of Arcadia. I think I edged it. Also, what advent calendars do you both have? None is not an acceptable answer. So,
mate, I don't have any. I'm really sorry. I don't have an advent calendar.
Oh, mate, I've got it's
because vegan chocolate just tastes like ass. They
need to step that up. I've got a coffee one that my wife got me, so it's different. Oh, nice. Coffee that we're trying to brew every morning. And then I've got some chocolate ones that my mum and my mum-in-law got me.
I should just get a coffee one. I shouldn't get a chocolate one. I should just
get
something
else. There's a whole world of savoury stuff.
Why haven't I even thought of that? I didn't know why I haven't thought of that.
There's a whole world of them.
I tell you what, should do is we should make a UBP take calendar for next year. Ooh. So when you open it up, it's got a game recommendation on the inside or a spicy
tell you
take.
What. That's such a good idea. We could do a December gaming advent calendar. So
yeah,
you'd have to put it with like something like Game Pass so people have access to these things. But still, I like the idea of doing that.
Yeah.
In terms of games for your initial, so you need something beginning with J and then something beginning with G, unless you want to use your M card in the middle. But
I am going to use the M card, mate, because the fact that I get to go with Jet Set Radio Future.
Oh.
Yeah, take that. Then follow up with a big heavy dose of Metroid.
Metroid. That's fine. And then,
I'm not the original. I'm just going Super Metroid. Actually, I can't do Super because it's
Metroid Dread. You could have.
I could have Metroid Dread. I'll go for Metroid Dread. And then I will finish you off. It's Body Blow, Face Punch, and then another Body Blow with the G for God Hand.
Oh, my God.
I think I'm pretty much stuck.
I can crawl back to not dead status with Shovel Knight for me personally. That's my personal champion. And T is just going to be Titanfall 2 because I saw the news this morning that the guy, Jason West, who helped put that game together, is now going across to Battlefield. So I was like, is Titanfall 3 just over there now? Oh. Like, we're just not even getting there anymore?
You could have gone for Tales of Symphonia. Would have been a good
Tales of Arise is incredible. Tales of Arise is great. But I think you would slightly edge that because...
Do you not have a middle name?
I do not have a middle name other than just...
I feel like I got an extra pin on you there. That was a bit of a cheeky rabbit punch.
That's the way the initials game goes. Sometimes it's just the way the cards are going to fall. But next question from Jack Asbury-Hayes, who says, hey lads, good to be back again. My question is, how excited are you for Spider-Man No Way Home? And do you think we'll actually get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield? Now, we've not talked about this on this podcast, I don't think. But what are your thoughts on that before I ruin everything with a hot take?
I am super hyped for it. I don't know if you are as hyped as I am for it. I don't know because we have... Oh, you're not hyped? Oh, okay. So I am really excited, but only because of the fact that I'm like... There are certain times where fan service is okay. And I think that this MCU needs a heavy dose of fan service right now because after the lull after Endgame has just basically come and just blown all of like our endurance out of the water. Mm-hmm. Like Black Widow didn't do as well. Like 10 Rings was amazing, but still not the sort of fire underneath the franchise again that we need to get back into the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. Whereas Spider-Man has been consistently just like heavy dose of fan service with tons of changes and tweaks along the way. And the fact that they're bringing back so many characters, the fact that we've got Doctor Strange, I am like, it's hard not to be swept up in this. Like
my thing, and it, again, I'm going to be super, it's not that I'm not excited for it at all. It's not that I'm not curious at all, but I also look at it and I can't divorce the business side of it from it because I look at the way that Sony have handled stuff and the way that Sony have had to broker a new deal with Marvel to do Spider-Man movies at all, or Marvel to be able to do Spider-Man movies at all. And I look at the stuff that Sony has in the pipeline and the fact that they won't let the Spider-Man IP go in regards to movies and TV and stuff. And so I look at the Venom movies that came out. I look at the fact they have the Morbius movie coming up. I know that they're doing a whole bunch of other stuff that's all tied into the Spider-Verse side of things. And this kind of feels like brand synergy, the movie to me, where I'm just like, okay, really? It's like Sony going like, look, do you know how many properties we've got, lads? Do you know how many different things we can cash in on? Look at these different, look, I've opened a tear and look, it's Willem Dafoe. Yeah. Look, it's Alfred Molina. And I am excited for that, but I'm also aware of just how much they're manipulating my nostalgia for easy money and easy favorable reception. For me personally, you never get to do that. You never get to cash in on something that I previously loved that built itself up in itself to now cash in on that now and go, well, you love that, you'll love this. And I'm just like, no, you need to build up. You can't, like, I feel like I know how that movie opens. I know what the big peril thing is. I largely know how it ends because we've seen what looks like the final battle. And I hope there's so much more to it. I just hope there's more to it. And so I'm trying to divorce the business side of it. I'm trying to divorce Sony being big old a-holes the way that they've sorted all that stuff out. And I just see it as a launch point for the future of Spider-Man movies that only Sony are going to get increasingly tendril-like over. And that's what makes me weird with it.
I feel like you are totally like, you're allowed to have your own opinion on that. And I think that it's a classic case of hype versus reality. Mm. Like that, this is the perfect clash, the immovable object versus the Incredible Hulk, as it were.
The dialogue in the trailer as well is like horrendous. Like where they're just like, oh, what's your name? And he's like, Otto Octavius. And they're like, oh, ha ha ha, is it really? I'm like, is this Ant-Man? We did this joke 10 years ago.
So I'm Otto Octavius, right? And you just come up and you said that and be like, I'm sorry, mate. Your name's Peter Parker. Yeah. You want to cast stones in this very glass house that you're living in? You know what I've done? I would have gotten my little like octo tendril, right? And as he's laughing, I'm like, oh, I would have mimicked him laughing with the little mouths of the tendril. Oh, you think that's so funny? And then I would have stabbed Ned just right through the face.
Make all of his Lego fall on the floor again. I do like the idea that they're doing the thing where Alfred Molina's arc is helping Tom Holland's Peter Parker. I like that idea. I didn't see that coming. I thought he would just be a villain. But I don't know. I've read like tiny bits of the leaked script. I've read how it opened. I'm not going to share them here. But I am very curious just what they do overall with the characters and to make it not feel like things you remember the movie. I never want to go into a movie in the modern day and just be doing the Leo meme the whole way through. Like, well, I know what that is.
And
I just, something about that makes me at the core quite sad because I'm just like, oh, have all we got things from the past? I need new stuff.
But maybe this has to happen for it to be reborn as something else. So maybe we're just getting all of the threads tied up so that going forward, we get a brand new Spider-Man that is able to forge his own thing. Like at the end of the day.
Well, they've already confirmed 4, 5, and 6 with Holland. So it's definitely going to be at least him.
Ah, right. Okay. So I didn't actually know that. I was kind of hoping that he'd die at the end of this one and then Miles Morales would just take over.
Well, that could happen because all they've said is that they're going to do Spider-Man 4, 5, and 6. I don't actually think they've said it's with Holland. So that'd be sweet.
If it's 4, 5, and 6, that doesn't necessarily also mean that they're going to be live action ones. Could be Into the Spider-Verse related ones where Holland gets pulled into that, which would be quite
fun. I mean, Spider-Verse is my favorite superhero thing across the board. That's the most fun I've had with any superhero thing ever.
Do you know what? My mind is actually blowing at the thought of like, it makes so much sense in one slant if you go Holland from the real world gets pulled into the Spider-Verse because then he gets like digitized, right? Imagine that. Uh-huh. But how mind-blowing would it be if it was the other way around? If the Spider-Verse interrupted the live-action universe came in with his like 30 frames a second moving? That would actually be amazing.
Nicolas Cage comes in as noir Spider-Man. You could have him with the coat on. You could have him with the little top hat on. He just comes in and he's in black and white.
But what happens is that he opens up a portal, right? As Ghost Rider's riding along. And Ghost Rider falls in and Spider-Man noir falls out the other side and takes his place. Like, goes, there can be only one.
The thing that I'm hoping for, because obviously they're doing the multiverse stuff, there are rumors of Wesley Snipes doing something as Blade before Mahershala Ali.
My brain can't take all this,
Blade.
Mate.
Because they've got X-Men and Fantastic Four are acquired now, there's mention of Chris Evans returning as Human Torch and meeting his new self as Captain America.
That would be amazing.
It's the same actor. I would love that they talk to each other like they did in Endgame, where they talk, like Chris Evans talks to Chris Evans. I don't know if they do something like that. I think all that stuff is crazy banana sandwich, mad frog hat time, but I would love them to go crazy with the multiverse stuff. And I think it's all, apparently that's what the Doctor Strange multiverse movie is. It's just, here's every single thing we own, every actor we could get back. And we're going to do that. And that seems like it's the next phase for Marvel. I'm curious by that, but I just, on an absolute personal level, cannot get that excited for things I already loved years ago.
All I'm just saying, closing remark, is that if the multiverse thing is the way that they're going to go, then actually in terms of like storytelling and craziness, we could actually be in for the kind of Fast and Furious trend for the MCU, which could actually be not terrible. It could just be like, look, at the end of the day, we're going to kill off a load of characters, but that's fine because it's in this universe. Yeah. Who cares? Like,
well, that's the thing. That's what they did in Loki. And that like fundamentally made me not care about almost any of it. Cause I was like, oh, well, all of it's just in this
one timeline.
You develop
a sense of detachment, don't you? Yeah, because you'd like, there's nothing at stake.
Marvel, like comic readers have had that for decades. It's always like, well, you know, the main timeline is the 616 stuff and whatever else. But if you're telling me that, you know, 10 years worth of movies and investment is just one of infinite timelines and we're going to visualize that, then that fundamentally makes me disconnect from it in terms of stakes.
Yeah, you may be right. Like, maybe you're right.
Well, there's 50 other Peter Parkers if this one dies, so who literally cares? But I've got such an elongated, pernickety take on all this stuff. We'll see how it plays out. That movie will be out in a couple of weeks, and we'll still be doing UBP on the Friday after that, so we can talk about it then.
Yeah.
A final question from Richard Frutell, who says, which game for you has the best stealth elements in video game history? For me, it will be Metal Gear Solid 5, simply because of how well they function and how variably the player can utilize them, combined with the classic Kojima what the F just happened style story.
Now
I'm going to Splinter Cell.
Splinter Cell is a fantastic thing, but... But I have to kind of think that one of the later games in the stealth genre is probably going to be one of the best mechanically, because it's had
Blacklist
more time
plays
to
really well.
Blacklist is a great game. Yeah. It's so underrated when compared to like the other thing. I mean, the story was a bit rogue in places, but the gameplay element was really good. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, do you remember, is it Styx? Strix?
Oh, yeah, the little
goblin.
Yes. Styx, the Master of Shadow or something.
Yeah. That was an amazing game to play. Like, I remember just like sneaking around in that and being like, oh, I actually feel like that I'm constantly underpowered, but really like powerful if I'm in the Shadow Strike.
I can't remember what that's called, but there's two of them. There's a newer one that's on newer gen stuff. That game, because I had an upgrade from last gen to be nice and smooth and everything, but that feels like such an old school stealth game, like a Thief style old school.
And
I love that feel, like, of just sort of like you know, tactically going through a level one by one, looking at guard patterns, looking at different ways to take people out. I would go any stealth game that lets me do an aerial kill, because I always hate when I can't drop on some dude.
Yeah, that sucks, doesn't it? When you're like watching them walk underneath you and they're just kind of like, oh, what am I going to do? Just drop my shoe on him?
I want people to do cool, badass stealth kills as I move through a level. That's always the thing that's going to elevate it for me, which is why I'll say Blacklist ultimately.
Like, the Batman sections had some amazing stealth bits. I really enjoyed the takedown sections of that. I mean, they weren't the most complex, but in terms of what they were actually achieving with all the distraction gadgets that you could use and then the takedowns, got to admit, they were pretty decent.
No, I love the Mark and Execute stuff that came in Conviction and then was in Blacklist. And I love that thing in Arkham Knight where you can just like target like five people at once and ping pong between them all. Yeah. I think it's called like a fear takedown or something.
Yeah.
But I love that in stealth as a genre evolution, like give me a power up where I can build it up and then take out like seven dudes in a really cool way. That stuff would be sweet. But yes, thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions, thoughts, whatever you'd like us to ever talk about, including all food and pancake opinions going forward, because we'll always take as many as we can. Now, we got a massive response this week because of all the Spotify stuff, which again is phenomenal, but we got so many submissions sent in that I think I'm going to carry them across to at least next week. And then the week after that will be, you know, Halo will have been out for a bit. We'll probably talk about Halo next week.
Have to do a Christmas special soon, won't we?
We'll do a Christmas special, and we'll try and pre-record some stuff as well so that we're not away from your ear holes for too long. But me and Jules need to figure out exactly when we're departing, because it's sometime in the next few weeks.
There's something that I want to raise as well that Scott doesn't know about. So I'm just bringing this on him right now. Before we start this podcast today, we were talking about getting some nice little Untitled Banter podcast mugs made. Yeah. So you can sip your tea while you listen to Scott and me. If you'd like that, just let us know and we'll try and get some made, because it could be quite nice to have some little Untitled Banter podcast sippy mugs.
Yeah, Untitled Banter mug cast is what I have for you with that. But we have the artwork from the podcast itself, which I'm going to go into Photoshop and have a bit more tinker around with that. It was a Rich Hudson original back in the day.
Bless.
So I'm going to, Rich Bless. I'm going to go back in and change that a little bit, and then we'll see if we can make it work for like a wraparound mug design. But yeah, let us know on social media. Come give us a ting if you want one of them in the production in the future. Mm-hmm. But for now, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you to everybody, and it's been the UBP, the UBP.
UBP, UBP.
The UBP. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.